Okay, it's Sunday, February 23rd, 2003, Toronto to Manhattan, and it's Bob talking to Christine. Here she is.
Hello.
Hello, Christine.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Good.
You're okay.
Yeah, I'm all right. So, I didn't really have anything to talk about. I just thought I'd like to talk to Bob, but one thing that is fresh in my mind, of course, is excellent. Okay, is the Duncan Cameron thing we went to today.
Okay.
And I just need a perspective on who he is.
Right. What did he tell you first he was?
He didn't say.
Well, did you know anything about him?
Well, I just knew, I got an introduction from Matthew because he's been on the show the last 2 weeks. And the first time Matthew met him, he did a brief cleansing, and Matt kind of thought it was interesting because Duncan had pointed out an injury Matt had gotten through karate about 2 or 3 years ago.
Right.
And it was just a matter of doing his thing and just saying, "What's wrong with that foot?" and pointed to one of his feet. He said, "I'm not seeing anything there. What's up with that?" And Matt told him and kind of thought it was weird, and he did whatever he does. And for the next 24 hours, Matt's foot hurt as if he had just freshly, you know, injured it. So he kind of thought, okay, well, maybe this is psychological, maybe it's not. But it went away, and that was that. But he just said it was kind of an interesting experience. You have to meet him.
Right.
So I did. But we were kind of thrown into this situation with a big group of people, and they were all familiar with his work and what he did, and I was probably the newbie there.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what to expect, and I still don't have a clear understanding of what he's about.
Well, did he just do healings?
Yeah. Well, today, well, what we did today I would have called meditation.
Right.
But I don't know if that's a type of cleansing. I don't know how he sees that. I really don't know. But I saw it as meditation.
Yeah, did he do visualizations while you were meditating?
No. Most of it was to, the biggest chunk was a trance dance, which was set to music, and you were just supposed to get out of 3D land somehow.
And dance.
And, yeah, I don't know if a lot of people actually moved or not, but...
Yeah, your eyes closed.
Yeah.
And he was playing this music.
Yes, and it went on for about an hour, hour and a half.
Right, so you're sitting there and going into the music, whatever way you want to do it.
Yeah, kind of. And some people probably just stood there and didn't do anything, and some people were probably jumping around. I couldn't tell you. My eyes were closed.
But that's a long time to stand in a spot.
It is. It is.
And then after that, he did a group healing.
He did a healing, yes, with this one girl, and... it was a healing circle, and that was kind of interesting because we got a lot of feedback from Loretta and a few other people there who were reading something from her, a really negative sort of energy. They were just getting bad feelings from this girl in the middle of the room.
While they were healing her?
There was the initial healing where everybody was in a circle, and then the circle sort of dissolved, and we moved to the sides.
And this girl hadn't been singled out yet.
No, she was. She was in the center the whole time.
Oh, okay. So then after you dissolve, what happened?
Well, a few people, Duncan basically said, anybody who still wants to remain part of the circle, do so. If you don't, you don't feel you can assist in any way, then step out. And that's when, you know, Loretta just kind of told me that she was getting really bad vibes from her. and then Matt said the only thing he noticed was that her eyes were closed and they were moving. The circle was constantly moving in different directions around her. She always seemed to be facing him. So he didn't know if that was significant or not, but that's what he noticed.
Always facing Matt.
Yeah, she just always seemed to end up facing him.
Right.
So I didn't know if there was some sort of connection there or not.
Even though she wasn't moving, the circle was moving.
The circle was moving.
But then it would stop and Matt would be the one opposite her.
Something like that. I mean, she would adjust where she was a little bit.
Yeah.
But she would just kind of turn on the spot wherever she kind of felt, I guess, energy was going.
Right.
But anyway, so this I was watching from the sidelines, and
Loretta whispered this point to her.
Yeah, to me, yeah.
And nothing came out of that, though. That's just what Loretta said.
That's what Loretta said, and then there was another girl there, a woman, Deb, who I think is the same Deb that we've heard a lot about, I'm not sure.
Deb Aaron.
I think so.
Yeah, I know Deb.
Okay, and she was quite involved, and she was in tears at one point, and so this is all very new to me, right? So I'm just watching this from the sides, and I'm not trying to make a judgment here at all,
yeah.
But I'm trying to figure out what's going on, and anyway, it was a really unique experience, but we didn't really have very much direct communication with Duncan the whole time.
Right. Did you guys pay for this?
No. Okay. Loretta invited us.
All free, okay.
So, yeah, yes.
But you would have liked to interact with him a little bit.
I would have liked more guidance. I would have liked, when we started off, everybody else there, I guess this was the fifth or sixth session.
Right.
And they'd have been to the others. This was our first one.
You mean through the weeks? Once a week, maybe, or something?
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah, over the last couple of weeks. And so he made a reference. He said, okay, try to find that sweet spot that you found in the last session. And we're like, well, okay, well, we don't know what that is.
Yeah.
But we didn't get any guidance, so we didn't know what we were supposed to do. And then at the end, they were asking us for feedback, and I'm like, I don't know what I was feeling, right?
Right.
I don't know if I was supposed to turn everything off or if I was supposed to be more... have more heightened senses, or you know, I didn't know. So
but they would say it's not a supposed issue. What did you feel? They might have said
something like that.
And
yeah.
You told them what you felt.
Yeah, and for the first one, I kind of felt nothing. I was just relaxed.
Right.
That's it.
And then the second one, when you're observing it.
For that, well, for the very first exercise, I felt nothing. For the trance dance. That was kind of trippy because I was very aware of the music in the beginning, but I got to a point where I just wasn't aware of the music at all. Like, it's
right.
Like there was no music in the room, and I kind of felt like I was in a nothingness sort of place.
Right.
The kind of place that we try to achieve when in our karate meditation.
Right.
You try to just think of nothing so that you can clear your mind so that you can focus on the task at hand.
Right.
So that's what I got, but I certainly didn't leave 3D land because I've got the baby kicking in time to the music.
Yeah.
Because that's all happening.
The baby was responding?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But then I don't know if that's because the baby was hungry. We'd been there 3 hours and
right.
I was due to eat, like all this stuff.
Oh,
and then the final healing circle thing, just as an observer, I don't know what was going on, but people were saying that they could see stuff, and they were at a different level than I was. So.
And they were saying that in the circle or after it was over.
Kind of after the circle had sort of dissolved
right.
a bit. It was still going on, but.
But were they talking to others one-on-one, or just to
Yep, just
so you overheard these remarks?
Yeah, and a couple were spoken to me, but everybody was trying to whisper and stay quiet because she was still doing her thing. So
when was Deb crying, in the earlier part or the later part?
It was the later part.
Right.
The later part, yeah.
Okay, here's the thing. Fortunately, I know a bit of what you're talking about because I met Duncan in September.
Okay.
Nelson and I went over to Loretta's house, and I met him, and Deb was there, too. Hadn't seen Deb in a couple of years. And Duncan's story, his background is interesting, and I was curious about it. I knew a bit about it. You see, there's these famous, if you heard the radio shows, I don't know what they talked about, but do you know if they talked about the Montauk experiments? Do you remember that word?
Well, they did talk about that, only because Matthew told me, because I haven't listened to the last couple shows.
So Matthew told you privately?
Yeah.
And they had talked about it.
Yeah.
On the show, right.
Yeah.
Well, the Montauk is on Long Island, you know, just opposite me, and where I'm here, and there's a guy named Al Bielik.
mm-hmm.
and another guy, Preston Nichols, who we actually had on. Remember the
very first show? Yeah, I remember. We had samples
of different people back in July 7th.
Yeah.
Preston was the guy who went through the time machine.
Right.
And it seemed pretty vague to a lot of people as he was talking. But I've seen footage of these guys on Manhattan Neighborhood Network in the 90s on various shows. I've heard the story. I have a friend who has the books written by Peter Moon about that. But supposedly they were put through a very sophisticated hyperdimensional MK Ultra, which is a term for the CIA mind control projects of
mm-hmm.
the 40s, 50s, 60s, which included LSD and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
They were somehow doing this very extreme version in the bowels of some Air Force base or naval base or whatever it is, the Army base out there in Montauk, and they were programmed to be all kinds of strange things in terms of time travel and this and that. So it was all pretty confused, and most people don't believe it, but I've seen footage of a psychic going down to that place in Montauk and picking up weird, horrible scenes and torture and wacky stuff. So it's sort of like an exaggerated horror movie that comes out of somebody's impression of what Tesla was working with,
mm-hmm.
something like that, Tesla technology.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm just saying now may be not accurate from Duncan or Preston or Peter Moon's point of view, because I'm not an expert on it. But when I got to meet him, I got him to talk about a bit about what happened to him in his life. And one of the interesting thing was that when he grew up in Long Island, a good friend of his died, and Duncan didn't know what happened. He lost memory or something, and maybe there was another person involved who was guilty in murdering the person, or was suggested, I can't remember. But the interesting thing was this person, Duncan's friend, disappeared and never returned, and Duncan himself disappeared for a while and then came back. That was a traumatic event when he was 13, and there was a connection to, well, the person who disappeared must have been murdered or something. So I'm just trying to remember quickly what he was telling me in September. Then what happened when he was late teens, I think he said he was zapped through time and ended up in Vietnam, and he never came back. So I would ask him questions. He never came back for a long time. So I would ask him, well, what did the people, your parents and neighbors think of you disappearing? And he says, I don't know. So he gave a very vague, inconclusive sort of explanation of the weird experiences he went through. And then in the 70s, he was back from Vietnam. I think he was a carpenter, or maybe that was in the 80s. And then he met Al Bielek, and that was a big event. When he met Al Bielek, I think in 1986 at some, you know, fringe UFO conference, and maybe Preston Nichols, he met Al Bielek, or he was a friend of Preston, and then they met Al Bielek. But Bielek kind of expressed an understanding of what they went through, and Bielek seemed to know about it, and he said he could explain it to them in some way. Now, I had seen a tape of Bielek in 1990 at Walter Bohr's house in Paradise, New Mexico, so I knew Bielek's line, and I checked out with the Evergreens what Bielek was saying, and they said it was totally made up and ridiculous. So having known that in the early 90s, and then hearing about the Montauk things, and thinking it was sort of similar to Al Bielek stuff, I discounted it. Then when I met Duncan, he told me his version of what happened, but I was surprised to hear that he was triggered off by Al Bielek, or in terms of understanding it. But I've already got this other information from the Evergreens on Al Bielek. So I'm sitting there in September, last September, and he's explaining how Al Bielek and them, Al Bielek got him, Duncan, and Preston into the New Age circuit and going around talking about this stuff. But eventually, Duncan told me, I don't know, in the early 90s or something, he got fed up with it all. And he didn't want to really deal with it or talk about it, or it was a part of his life that he wasn't interested in anymore. And he got into some kind of meditation or psychic action and being a healer or something like that. More of what he is now. So the past that he is well known for among the New Age fringe circuit that knows about this Montauk stuff, he's not interested in that anymore. And I don't really know... Maybe he was not that keen on explaining to me what actually happened, so he just sort of lazily quickly ran through the 30 years thing and left holes, but didn't care if he finished, completed them or not. But a lot of gaps in his explanation. So then that day I was with him, I knew he was doing some psychic personal stuff with some of the people there in the room. And so he's doing this healer thing or whatever. I don't know what it is he does. But when I first walked in and met him, I said, hey, Duncan, I met him, and for some reason he interpreted me as coming on very aggressive. So he ran out of the room after he sort of quickly acknowledged me. So he came back hours later after treating people, and he was more relaxed. So then I think they told him that he had freaked out about me or something. So I relaxed or didn't want to bother him as much or made sure I didn't do anything, because he seemed to react extreme to it. So I wasn't intending to be aggressive or anything, I don't think. But he may have been in a very sensitive mood. So he sat down, and then that's when then he relaxed, and then I was able to ask him about the past I've just explained to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then we get up to the present, and up to September 7th in the room, and he was talking a bit about what he was was trying to teach now, and I think he was talking about sex in some way. There was something about sex in there as a metaphor, one's sexual life. Now, we had a nice talk, and then I had to go, so then he went off and I left. And later I was told by Loretta that, I think it was Loretta told me that he analyzed me he says, the thing about Bob is that he channels from another dimension and doesn't know it. So that was his summary of me, his aura whiff of me. I channel from another dimension, or I have access to another dimension, to another dimension, or other dimensions, and I don't know it, and it comes through me. So that is the extent of my life with Duncan. And then I hear that he's on the Cloak and Dagger show, and a person emailed me last week in the middle of the show and said, this Duncan guy who's on there, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's okay as far as he goes, but he doesn't go far enough. And this person was critiquing him and emailing to me.
Yeah.
And I only know this person a little bit. I met the person through Nelson and a long time ago. And this person said then said what they do and how they do it in their they do healing in a healing art they do. I don't want to identify the person, so I won't say what it is. Mm-hmm. So I was getting this feedback from someone who was critiquing him. So that was that. I don't know what to say about any of it. And then now you're telling me what happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
So then since there is kind of a course outline here or a consistent theme I'm laying out here, let's fit it into the five bodies. What's going on here?
Okay.
Ah, that reminds me. I remember when after Duncan had talked about his life a while, I actually did apply the five bodies. Him. After he explained what had happened, I said, I think a lot of people in the 70s were responding to the effects of the TV screen. And the TV screen is tactile psychic energy. It's materialized resonating chi energy or astral energy, whatever you want to call the etheric body, the other levels in humans that a lot of people, especially in the West, deny, but other cultures accept. I was telling him that TV was this, and this is the virtualization or the simulation of those energies, and that a lot of people were responding to this and groping around the 70s and 80s, what was called the New Age, trying to figure out how to explain what was happening to them. And I was saying that this is what he was trying to explain what was happening to himself and groping around with different funny anomalous experiences. And so I kind of told him this TV line. And of course, he had never heard that before, and he found it interesting. He went along with the theme, and sort of thought about it. And I don't know if he ever would think about it anymore. But I did present to him what I'm presenting now, which is we got the five bodies. We've got the physical body, which the image of is defined and dominated, and the hegemony comes out of the IG Farben chemical pharmaceutical science mythology of the last 200 years, so we call that the physical body. You know, it's like when you're in your pregnancy, you go to the hospital, they check out stuff, they have meters, and they're checking everything within known physics and chemistry and biology and whatever else they use, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they use modern science terms and the measurements that the technologies come out with. That's all what we call the physical body. Now, we know that more and more people are interested in the astral body, which is these other energies that other cultures accept and the West doesn't, and we have the increase of that. Now, I believe there is astral energies, which is where our energies of other dimensions that you go to when you die, so and they're in our body. So we have the astral body, and then we have the TV body, and then we have the chip body. All of those things are what we're made up of now, and if we acknowledge them, we're describing what we are totally, actually what we would say our physical body is, but including more than just the physical stuff from the IG Farben and the chemical industries. We have a larger notion of physicalness, but we would still just be groping around trying to explain what was happening to us. And what is happening to us, we're forever excavating, and that's the mystery body.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we, the total of all of the whole situation here, wherever we are, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these four parts are attempts, an updated modern version of explaining the mystery body. So, or the mystery experience of existence. All right, so with that in mind, we look at this guy is focusing on the astral body energies.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting about the astral body energies, they are, if we get instrumentation to measure it, we might be able to call it the tactile energies. If we are using sensory terms, then the tactile term is the best to explain the organization of our consciousness, because the tactile entity or process is the thing that organizes the physical sensory data, and it's not a sense in itself, so it's somewhere else. So it's sort of like the astral, somewhere else, even though it's part of us. So the tactile energies were evoked by TV, and then you have this renaissance and retrieval of tactile kind of interaction, like the meditation circles, where people basically are trying to communicate not by looking or speaking, but by feeling. But the feeling is for intervals, resonating intervals between people. One of the stereotypical methods they begin to, when they first teach you how to heal, the laying on of hands and those kind of things, is to put your two hands up and create a, imagine a ball you're holding, right? And the two hands aren't touching. So you start feeling a pulsing going on between the two hands. So you're making yourself sensitive to the tactile proprioceptive energies in your body. And the New Age then thinks that this can, by focusing on it, it helps helps relax a person, helps make the person not be so eye-oriented, not so ear-oriented, which leads to mental chattering, try to lower and be quiet. And it's the same thing you do in karate. That, and you know, the Japanese are one of the most tactile cultures, and the Chinese and those Asian cultures, they are very used to operating in that gap, that center, which is nothing. But they don't mean the nothing that the West means, which is an emptiness. They mean a resonating nothing. And so you focus on it and work with it in your karate, and when you say don't imagine you're nothing, you don't visualize or hear where you are. You just feel it. Do you agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's more like proprioceptive. Feel the proprioceptive balancing mechanism in yourself without trying to visualize or put mental chatter on it. And that's that would be putting tactility in action, because tactility can't be seen, heard, or even touched. So the karate and the Asian arts are forms of working with this resonating interval. So television is the extension of the resonating interval, and it is an empty medium in the sense that it just moves on with imagery and sound. It doesn't stop. It doesn't come to a stationary point and says, this is the final image we're moving towards. This is the final word, or this is the final gesture. It just keeps going. And that's just in the content. It's actual thing without the content, just this snow screen, which is a sound of the hiss of static and electricity. So That's tactility. TV has completed it. The movie's not tactile. The book is not tactile. The newspaper isn't. Radio is beginning to be tactile because it's electric, but it doesn't have the visual component or the live transmission of all the senses. So I see in the 70s a whole massive preference in the baby boomer generation and later older people for the tactile experience due to the unconscious effect collectively of the tactile TV. So you have people thinking, if this is a new experience for Westerners, then it becomes emotionally intense and loosens up from the left hemisphere book bias conditioning into right hemisphere non-book imagery, and so a lot of people do visualization and they get emotional and moving through that kind of new imagistic experience. And there's no saying that it isn't healing, because humans like new experiences and that gives them a new experience, Westerners anyways. So what it means, how you translate it into the other realities, the other bodies, is the issue. Now, I want to just go back to, where do we get these bodies from? First of all, do you want to say anything about what I'm saying?
No.
Okay. So are you following it?
Yes.
Okay. So, when I talk about these bodies, they come from the media environments that have grown up under electricity over the last 150 years. Now, when the telegraph came in, or the radio, or the telephone, these early technologies, these were massive environments. You can't say they were our private bodies at that point. They were part of the collective body, the collective space, the collective memes, or the physical material conditions that people lived in, which would include communication media. So these things were we'll call them the public body, the collective bodies. But as the digital area came in, the radio, the TV, the movie, these collective public bodies, shared social bodies, became miniaturized so that someone could engage in the space of radio and TV at their own pace by having a VCR and answer machines and Walkmans. You weren't within this massive, simultaneously powerful environment like they were in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the beginning of the individualization and autonomy in relation to these massive environments and in relation to the content, because you could engage in the content at will rather than the mass programming of what the schedule said it had to be when you experienced it. So, as you get into the 80s and 90s and this technology miniaturizes even more and becomes user-friendly, you now have the point where you've got these little gadgets that have radio and TV and movies and all these data in little things that you can modulate and engage in when at your own rate, and still have that autonomy. So at that point, as these mass environments shrink, we are not in those environments anymore, because people can interact with them at their own rate, and as they get smaller, they become like earrings or bracelets or accessories, and we're left with the body that is in a sense feels it's outside these massive media environments. It's standing naked with just its own first nature body.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when I say we have five bodies, that's a later effect of the technological development. As these massive environments shrink and people can become less controlled by them. Now, they're generally less controlled in their recreational relationship with these things. We are still controlled by them in the economy and in the way we do work. People still have to go and interact with the massive computer environments which contain all these other media, and they put out content for these media, and they work in other versions of technology and mass environments. You still got this legacy of huge environments and the wealth they create. But in the leading edge of technology, a person interacts on the communicatory level, which might be, can't say it's just recreational, but it was largely recreational. There is a bit of autonomy there. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So these massive environments at the leading edge become accessories or separate bodies, and they're more private bodies. We all got them. We all share them. It's still a legacy of the public spaces and shared social spaces that people lived in when these environments first came massively into intruding into the 20th century. So that's an important distinction. I'm just explaining where these five bodies came from. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've never said that to you before, right?
No.
Yeah. So we must remember these historical environments are still communicating with each other and sharing wealth production in massive levels around the planet. And that goes on, and that's the Android meme. But the experience of the individual now is a voluntary ESP where it has increased autonomy, and it can travel in these former environments rather subtly or autonomously, surf over them. It's like the idea that before, humans were inside huge mechanical, electronic, electromechanical environments, and they were controlled within them. But as the environments got, and the individuals were restricted in their movement, they were controlled more or less by these movement, these machines, and the machines could dominate, impose the rules. But as the machines get smaller, individuals can hop from one machine medium to another, hop around, and it's not as controlled by the machines. So when the human being before was inside these massive environments, the human being was fractionalized. If we think of fractionalizing as fragmented and restricted and specialized and compartmentalized, kind of unable to have a complete experience in old terms. When the machines get smaller, then the machines are fractionalizing, and the human becomes the big hegemonic entity, just like the machine was before. It becomes a big dominating, flexible apparatus that can hop from among the machines. So you say the machines have fractionalized. You see what I'm saying? They are scattered at our service,
uh-huh.
Whereas before they ruled us. Okay, so now, every one of these machine levels and these technologies, when they came in, changed medicine, changed healing, changed concepts. When the neuron body was dominant as an environment in the 19th and early 20th century under chemical science, then you had that produced a certain image of the body and controlled how healing was treated. But once you got out of the TV, into the TV era, then you had these resonating effects of TV, so people got into Asian forms of arts, Asian forms of healing arts, acupuncture, Tai Chi, massage, chiropractic, all these things, chiropractic being more of a Western development. Then when you get into the digital area, as the digital shrinks and we re-experience our bodies, first nature bodies, and have access to it, and it's kind of not as controlled by language and technology, then that would retrieve and archetypalize as healing entities, the herbs. And because the environment is getting tinier and tinier and tinier, we would bring in homeopathy. So herbs and homeopathy come in as healing arts in the 80s and 90s on fad levels, responding to the digital homeopathic environment. So the healing that Duncan was doing is very familiar. Many people do that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's been going on for 20, 30 years, and there's whole industries, and there's cults around that, and there are even the Dalai Lama is very, very involved in actually bringing that kind of healing stuff into hospitals in New York City and maybe other places I'm not aware of. So you have this astral body retrieval, thanks to television and the computer, coming back and affecting people's, the masses, the images of what healing and healing energy is and how it can be shaped. Now, as you get into the homeopathic and individual autonomy, then you're going to get individuals taking the astral tradition, the New Age astral tradition of the 70s and 80s, and individualize it, fractalize it, subjectivize it, and put their own spin on it. And that would be an expression of the fact that the individual is autonomous now due to the user-friendly homeopathic media and therefore can create and project its own hallucinated situation and not be accountable to other people who can go along and hallucinate because there's no common social space anymore to control people with. So in these New Age healing techniques, you're going to get a lot of new subjective mutations of it. So, had you ever heard of the healing circles and those kind of things before? Had you ever experienced them?
Never experienced them, but I'd heard of them, and I'd heard through... we have a few scattered friends here and there who have experimented in that sort of stuff.
Right, because it's that sort of stuff. It's something you've heard about. It's a meme that's out there. It's been around for a while.
Right.
The thing is, with Duncan, he, taking advantage of the media effects today, can personalize it and put his own little twist into it. you know, his own little, what he prefers, music, trance music, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So now, as we get more individualized and fragmented in terms of in relation to each other, not in terms of machines, the machines are getting fragmented and organized and controlled by us more. The individual subjectivities start to play off each other and hallucinate. That could become a healing experience. That's a new experience. I know some people have been through a lot of New Age stuff. I know Deb Aaron has. And so maybe Duncan's spin on it intrigues her because it's such a unique, almost idiosyncratic spin on the New Age meme. And so resonating with the increasing idiosyncrasy and eccentricity of communication today, Duncan has come up with some kind of healing style that takes New Age meme and eccentricizes it.
Mm-hmm.
And Deb, people respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's another form of probing. And it seems people in our recreational society want new experiences, new variations of old familiar experiences. So there's a real market for people to do their own version. Now, you get into the physical neuron body industry complex, the old chemical and doctor complex. They can't allow total subjectivity, from their point of view, taking over healing experiences. So they really try to police that kind of stuff and make sure it's labeled as quackery.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just their body. That's what we call the neuron body speaking. And they're in a minority because they're operating from a meme 100 years ago. And maybe at least up at the latest, 1945, 1950, but there's been many technologies and meme changes since then, so they're almost in a minority. And then that gets into Bush, who, if he represents some power structure that's trying to preserve some oil power or something in the war, the world is not hypnotized by that meme as much anymore, so it's very hard for them to implement it. So they either have to take a long time to create a general consensus, or they'll ignore the consensus and go ahead anyways. And they can take advantage of people. They can take advantage of moving on their own because people are living on their memes so much.
Mm-hmm.
People could be outraged about Vietnam because they're still working in a general collective social space under TV conditions, but it's been so fractionalized now that Bush and them can manufacture a hologram of support for themselves in the media.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not be based on any reality, because, and that is possible because it's so fragmented between all these phases of memes that people would be so distracted by other things they wouldn't be able to get together in a massive social mobilization to counter what Bush is doing. So then how do you account for the biggest, you know, supposedly collective mass demonstration in history, 11 million people, you know, last weekend,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
I would say that is an expression of the mystery body. The people are aware of the different bodies subconsciously. They live in them subconsciously, but they, being familiar with them, they still want to express something. And since the technology is favoring an awareness of first nature, because the second nature technology is getting shrinkier, smaller and smaller, and appears to be disappearing, then you have a massive demonstration of people stating, I'm a human being, and I don't want to be interfered with by any other memes,
mm-hmm.
even ancient memes. So these people come out, and they didn't, their signs may have targeted Bush and this and that, but they weren't into expressing they would deny being aligned with any political meme or social meme. They just were expressing, I'm a human being, and celebrating the first nature part of themselves. That includes everybody on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So the AP overall, the anthropomorphic physical, the sense of what humans are, is one of the main effects of the shrinking of media, and therefore the protest is on that level. The protest is expressing a celebration of the new reappearance of the AP. And it can't be translated into the other media, so the media will be accused of ignoring it. But it's definitely something that the authorities have to deal with. They have to acknowledge it. So that would be a different kind of statement of solidarity than of the political social turmoil of the 60s, which was done within a sense of a social unified space, a sense of progress, or within the media dynamics. And people, like, you know, the whole world's watching was the chant in 68 in Chicago. You don't have the whole world watching. None of these chants come up in these massive demonstrations. And if Bush, anti-Bush imagery was the common icon in the protest, that's because Bush represents the AP too. And he's fighting off against another AP, Bin Laden and Saddam. These are people that, like Bush, who the citizens don't have any control over. And they run huge environments from some Teflon place. That's what I call the Rumpelstiltskin syndrome. So then the people have actually created a technological situation that favors the AP sensibility. The people have that as a result, have that effect, and they're communicating and pointing their finger at other AP effects, which is Bush, who doesn't care to bother communicating skillfully or carefully through the media. He just carries on independent of the media, and so did the protesters against him. They didn't care about the media coverage. They were just trying to express something, and that's why more people than ever came out, because they weren't identifying or saying, well, these are run by communists, or it's run by this or that, and I'm a patriot, I'm not against war and this and that. People came out for non-reasons, non-political traditional reasons. So even the protesters, the people who organized the demonstrations, a lot of them were done by a Communist Party element called, they're called the World Workers' Party, or the Workers' World Party, I can't remember which. They are an obscure, fringe, extreme left group, and they organized it, but the event went way beyond whatever they thought they wanted to do it for.
Right.
So in the context of the AP rising, that means we can take old memes, old bodies like the Astor body, and play with them, and that sounds like what Duncan's doing, and that's why it wasn't familiar. And note, Duncan is not asking you to, he's not giving you a prescription, which will be the rule of this new subjectivity, hyper-subjectivity, where someone is offering astral traditional New Age healing techniques, but not imposing any pattern on it, just letting you interact with it. It's voluntary ESP. I think this term I use is exactly what you experienced. He was engaging in tactile, etheric, astral energies, or ESP energies in people, and he was asking you to have a voluntary relationship to it. He wasn't demanding you to follow a protocol. So in the general technological effect of voluntary ESP, which is the old cloned ESP of TV, radio environment shrinking, the autonomous individual is able to be detached from the cloned ESP mandates and have a voluntary relationship with it and engage with it voluntarily, so we call it voluntary ESP. Duncan is an expression in New Age circles of the voluntary ESP effect that's going on in the technological environment around us. So did I talk too long there?
No. No.
You followed it.
Yes, I did. Okay, wow.
So the thing is, of course you went there and you were looking for a common social metaphor, a reference point. And the, you wanted to be told more about what it was about or what to do.
Well, I wanted to experience what Matthew had experienced originally. I thought there would be more one-on-one stuff like that.
Right.
And at the end, when we were saying bye to him, Matt did ask him about the baby specifically, what he was getting from that.
Yeah.
He was asking, is the baby okay?
Right.
He just asked flat out. And Duncan's response was kind of neat because it was, I guess, vague, but I can't even remember what he said now. he said he asked me if I'd had a visit or a visitation from the baby yet in a dream. And the strange thing is I haven't been dreaming a lot while I've been pregnant.
Yeah.
And but I don't, you know, often you'll dream, but you'll wake up and not remember that you've dreamt.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I didn't want to offer anything there. I just said, this is just the way it is, right? I don't want to interpret it. And he said, well, you might dream tonight. You might get a visit tonight. He goes, now I'm not telling you that you will. And he had just a way of wording it that it was just, okay, so then what are you saying?
That's right. He was operating within the voluntary SPIA situation. He was even hesitant even to match in any way with your reality.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to impose on it. He made a suggestion, then immediately canceled it and said, I'm not telling you you're going to have this.
Yeah.
So he was being a nothing, which is what our reality is, one nothing talking to another nothing.
Yeah.
Because it's very hard for us to have a reference point to match with.
Yeah.
Because we fragmented and made everybody so individualistically autonomy, creating their own spaces, that the old shared social spaces are long melted away.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they're only held together by central news agencies, like, you know, Peter Mansbridge or Dan Rather. They're the ones who keep recycling old social imagery.
Mm-hmm.
They're called, in semiotics and postmodernism, they're called floating signifiers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just floating, aimless signifiers in people's actual lives. They don't have any social space image or signifier to relate to, so they make up their own stuff. And if they actually, they make up their own stuff, and maybe within doing that, retrieve old memes, become a fundamentalist or something, orthodox, or a fanatic, or a terrorist, or a businessman. They will put on these things as costumes, but their private lives are more quadriphenic in actuality, more discontinuous.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all rather fragile. It's amazing that's why we don't even communicate with the same language anymore. We just grunt and gesture and do phatic nods, and workplace is very quiet.
Yeah.
But then there's a lot of noise when in other areas other than the workplace. It's a bunch of bees humming. And then when they get out of the beehive, they make a lot of noise in other media. They might go bowling, they go to the hockey game, they go home, take drugs, or they get in groups or go to bars. Just make noise.
Yeah.
But it's chaotic. So there it is. That's our ground. And when Duncan presents an old meme, the New Age healing, the vagary that you experience is the only way he could present it.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like a vaguely remembered syndrome, the New Age healing situation. It's putting on gestures of healing, whereas the real healing that goes on is people going online or watching TV or driving a car. That's what really heals people. They would not be able, if they didn't have these media that they use all the time, it was immediately taken away. You have massive trauma, breakdown, disease, and heart attacks.
Mm-hmm.
So their actual drugs are their environments and media they use. That's the real healing metaphors. So the older arts of healing, like doctors and shamans, they have to weave in and out of that and offer their healing techniques as a recreational distraction.
Huh.
So you go to a doctor for a recreational distraction, just to see what it's like to interact with one human being, but generally it's only for 5 minutes, and they give you a pill, which is another medium.
All right.
So the breakdown of this whole situation gives lots of opportunities for anybody to create anything to create an audience.
Right.
So that's the world your baby's coming into.
Yeah. Yeah.
In other words, another point there, the vagueness, I think that you would, to get the one-on-one, you might have to pay for that.
Well, they said they've had smaller groups before, and Loretta personally likes them because when there's only half a dozen people, there is more one-on-one. But you get more than that, he needs more people helping to monitor them. So Loretta and Susan were there to help kind of monitor us, but of course they don't have what Duncan has to offer.
Yeah.
So,
he wanted more people to monitor, but why would that mean you need more people? Why not just have six people and have the two, three monitors?
Because I think at $55 a head, they kind of like to make it worthwhile for them. I don't know.
Oh, it did cost money.
Oh, it did for, apparently, for other people. This is what I heard.
Oh, okay. So,
But Loretta just invited us.
Right.
Because Matt seemed to kind of jive with him when he first met him.
So you got a freebie.
Yeah.
So, okay, so he was making money in this situation, but it was a mass demonstration so that then people might be interested and then have private sessions with him.
Yeah.
I know he offers private sessions. I don't know if he charges, but I assume he does.
Yeah, and I think he did mention that today, actually.
Right.
Private sessions. But, it was interesting. It was interesting.
Well, that's all one can say. That something is interesting. I mean, that's the most common response to anything. I was interesting.
Yeah.
Well, what does that mean?
Exactly. It doesn't really mean much.
It means that it was something I hadn't experienced before.
Right.
Now, you get all kinds of experiences and media content you never had before. So we would be rather flat in saying something else is interesting because you took time out from all the interesting data you can process and whatever media you use to go to one place and have an experience and sort of hoik up and archetypalize having an interesting experience. So the common response is, yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah.
So that's like the old phrase, whatever. You know,
yeah, yeah.
It was a whatever.
Yeah.
But it's a recreational, has no staying power because you have to deal with bringing a baby into a world that demands all kinds of things on you.
Yeah, yeah.
While pretending and by giving you, but also giving you media that makes you think we don't control you. But you still got to go through the old media dynamics, the old second nature, huge environments that provide backup for you.
Yeah.
So the, I would say that I was not that. I don't know what would heal me. If I'm regarding other things as healing me, then I wouldn't have to go to that, other than to go and have an interesting experience.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, interesting experience.
Right.
But I had the experience I wanted with him, which was to find out what he said privately about the legend that he apparently came out of.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to talk to him about that, and I found it odd that he could not account for missing parts of his life.
Right. Well, there was some... It was neat hearing, when you said that when you kind of entered the room and kind of, like, greeted him pretty openly or aggressively and he kind of ran away, Matt said that when he was having that brief sort of cleansing with him the first time he met him, Duncan told Matt that Matt was trying to strangle him, but not intentionally. He wasn't aware that he was doing this.
Yeah, he told him that.
Yeah, he was just psychically trying to strangle Duncan.
Yeah, that similar aggressive response or aggressive interpretation of someone.
Yeah, it was really strange. And I heard a couple people say the same thing today. I think Loretta even mentioned the same thing today with...
that other people were doing that.
Other people just... Yeah.
Okay, what I get from that is... people are quite numbed in this new situation. So if one pretends they're super sensitive and got a really good ESP and expresses it in ways like he did with me and with Matt, then that's an art form. If he's doing it as a neurosis or psychosis or something, that's one thing, but it doesn't matter. The effect is he temporarily appears to be very sensitive, and then that puts it makes you question your sensitivities.
Right.
And that may be an effective way to jolt you out of your sleep, out of your numbness that he's developed, if you respond to that way.
Right.
Because I didn't know he was doing healing when I walked in the room or that he'd been doing it, didn't know anything about him, really. And so if he had been doing some healing, then he'd be in a sensitive state, and just coming up and being in a normal volume of interaction would seem too loud for him, because
mm-hmm.
he's often in an astral state. Now, that might have been the actual reason why he was reacted that way to me. Another reason is that he was playing a psychic game of suddenly being sort of antisocially sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you start doing that at work, hey, trying to strangle me and this and that, you'd be out pretty quickly. But in a private space where you guys met with him, he could do that.
Yeah.
Play sort of, it's almost like not playing mind games, he's playing body sensitivity games.
Yeah.
Playing ESP games.
Mm-hmm.
So he's saying, Matt, you're trying to strangle me. and that's an exaggeration of what happens when any people, two people interact. You are trying to absorb that person, receive their what they project to you. At the same time, you don't want to be swallowed up by it, so you have to resist it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the drama of cognition, the blocking and the merging, the temporary matching, and then the temporary blocking, which is kind of making and rebuilding your separateness. So he plays on that drama of cognition by claiming and by accusing immediately, accusing first.
Right. Huh.
So I would say that's what Duncan creates. That what
right.
I've just said is what he creates.
He does stand out as being kind of he's different from everyone else there. Now, obviously, because he's the one offering this cleansing.
Yeah.
But all the other people there are really, really into it, I guess, is the only way I can describe it.
Yeah.
And some people have visualizations when they're asked to explain what they've experienced after the trance dance or whatever. Some people had visualizations. Other people felt sensations of water and fire and all that sort of stuff. And really, really going into their descriptions. And he's interesting, Duncan's interesting, because he sits back and listens as if it's all new to him. but when he talks, he's never talking in that, he comes across as kind of down-to-earth real.
Right.
Like, he doesn't talk as if he's on another astral plane at the moment talking to you, and he's just kind of answering your questions vaguely because he's not there or
something.
Yeah,
he's not operating from the astral body. Yeah, that's
yeah.
what I got when he brought up sex. Maybe he didn't do it today, but he will bring up sex as a metaphor for reality.
Well, Matt mentioned that too in his first meeting with him. Something about, he said it was sort of sexual, but not sexual, some of the
right.
references he was making. And I think that was just because sex is at the kind of at our core, I guess,
yeah.
or something.
And he may be playing on that.
It could be, yeah.
Yeah, I thought, well, what's this guy? He's bringing up the sex. Is he trying to get laid? Is he available to anybody? And sees if he brings it up immediately, how they respond? And you know, that, there was an element that he might have been playing a game, but I wasn't interested in playing, so it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
But I thought it was odd. But that's part of the breakdown of social space. I mean, people, you know, 50 years ago could not bring up certain things.
Yeah.
It was revolutionary in the 60s for a guy to walk up to a girl and just say, you want to fuck?
Yeah.
You know, you bypassed all the social dance that went on to lead up to any intimacy. And that's in the 60s. Imagine the anarchy now.
Mm-hmm.
And so people always have to come up with new ways to make themselves appealing or unique. So we've come to the point where a guy is going to be look like he's otherworldly, but every now and then mention sex, but mention in a vague way that you can't tell whether he means it that or not. I think that would be totally symptomatic of our times, the vague times we live in.
Yeah.
The ambivalent times. But, he would play off being otherworldly and being down to earth at the same time. Which would be clever enough. You send people into other spaces through proprioceptive and tactile spaces through the circle and meditation he does, and then you create, make yourself unique by remaining supposedly anchored in relation to that.
Mm-hmm. He also does voices.
What's that mean?
he does what we would call impressions.
Oh yeah?
Like he'll just be kind of walking around, chatting with people, greeting people, and he comes over and at one point he's like he's doing John Wayne or something, and he says something in just like kind of a twangy accent.
Is that right?
And then the next time he might come around, he'll do something kind of like a Japanese kind of like staccato way of speaking kind of thing, right? Like, and it's like he's, I don't know, like I just kind of asked Matt, well, what is he? Is he channeling dead people or something? And he's not, he's, this is like, it comes out in conversation? I don't know.
Well,
it was weird.
An old medium friend of mine, Dave Worster, when he first got in touch with the psychic people doing seances and psychic stuff in the 50s, when he first experienced it, not knowing he'd become a medium, he said, basically he interpreted these quacks or people putting on New Age healing demonstrations and early forms of seances. He says, these are just he says, well, why don't they just become actors? Since he thought they were just kind of faking it, and it was just like a C-movie level of acting.
Mm-hmm.
So this acting and put-on level in the New Age world, Dave thought that was his first impression. Then when he got into it and was real, he didn't hold that against people too much as much. So if the psychics are frustrated actors and act, then him putting on this stuff is a nice twist to it. He's throwing in his frustrated acting ability, is a frustrated, maybe he's a good actor, but he doesn't have a chance to do it. So in the group, he practices, rehearses some of the choices.
Yeah.
So one would have to, if I was there, I would have said, wait a minute, are you channeling? I would have confronted him about it if I had a chance to say, well, why are you doing these different voices? And then he might say, oh, I didn't know I was.
Right.
Or he might say, who knows what he would say, but the... I didn't know that. So he does that, and he would do it to people individually that he was interacting with?
Well, I just noticed it with us. I assumed he did it kind of with everybody.
Oh, so with you, he did with John Wayne at one point, then later did a...
I couldn't...
And why was he even talking to you?
Oh, it was just like... Well, it was like he was coming over and just being social.
He was mingling.
Yeah, he was mingling. And so it seemed kind of casual, and I just thought I'd sit and listen and see where it was going, right? And then he just kind of wandered off, and he was all smiley and just in a good mood, and I thought, okay, he's just a weird guy.
Total airhead here, floating about, talking about being a floating quadriphenic signifier, putting on different human memories, human elements, fragments of media imagery as his way to create references, temporary references with whoever he was addressing. So you know, obviously... Chamber of Commerce people would come in here and think this guy was really ridiculous. But they'd be wrong to think that everybody had to adapt to their meme in recreational times. It's like, you know, come on over here, the Department of Weird Experiences. Loretta offers the Department of Weird Communicatory Experiences.
Uh-huh.
And so Duncan is eccentrically doing already an eccentric meme, the New Age stuff.
Yeah.
So, but it doesn't relate to anything else. And neither does anything else relate to anything else. Nothing relates to anything anymore.
Okay.
Nothing connects. So it's really hard to connect, and so that's what the AP was expressing in those demonstrations, was an attempt to connect first nature, to bypass the Android meme, which disconnects everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where Baudrillard updates McLuhan and goes into the symptoms of the disconnected world of the 80s and 90s that McLuhan predicted, and Baudrillard just carried out the script. So that's why I publish quotes from Baudrillard and claim it's written by McLuhan.
Mm-hmm.
And put McLuhan in quotes around and associate him with book titles that he never wrote.
Mm-hmm.
That Baudrillard wrote. But if you read the Baudrillard quotes, have you seen some of them I posted?
Yes, I have actually.
Yeah. He's describing the fragmented floating signifiers and how they've come alive and have a life of their own, and the first nature human is wondering where it fits in.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an expression of, I see every one of these people that were there, who knows what weird floating signifier worlds they came from. Because if they're younger, then they grew up in a fragmented world from 1980 on.
Mm-hmm.
That if everybody is that really hallucinating and fragmented, then you can offer anything and it'll get an audience.
Mm-hmm.
So you have endless opportunities for, if we call creating new experiences wealth, endless wealth possibilities in human interaction, because there are no rules, so anything is available. You may getting a massive audience is another matter, but some people don't, you know, why get a mass audience? It's not as appealing anymore. So, but that ruins the economy, which is a mass medium. How are you going to create a common level of wealth in exchange to have a robust economy? How do you keep it based on old standardized bases of gold and money and credit? That's the problem now.
Mm-hmm.
So in the interval, while we can't decide, we express our frustration by saying, well, we're in a period of war.
Mm-hmm.
Period of war right now. Economy's dormant. We can't get people organized. Can't get them to agree.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the worlds that's bumping up against the world you experience today with Duncan.
Yeah. Okay. Huh. Well, that's that then.
What'd you say?
That's that then.
Yeah, that's that. Another interesting experience.
Yeah.
Another whatever.
Relatively interesting, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, but no, I'm saying even my discussion is a relatively interesting.
Yeah.
I just did a relatively interesting take on it.
Yes, he did.
And you did an interesting co-creation of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I think we should leave it at that.
Okay.
I think we've exhausted the potential of interestingness.
Right. Okay.
But it will resonate. You will think about it. You will think about the experience and then about what we talk about. See, you're lucky. You had an experience of talking about it in a unique way that the others didn't get a chance to do.